So just to summarize, the document, the report, the first couple of sections of it address the question of why the internet should matter to a network that sees itself as a radio operation. And those are sort of lay out some research stuff you were talking about before, some statistics. I don't actually have statistics about the streaming at our own stations, but the statistics I collected were more general studies from the Pew Research people and Arbitron and some other reports about, you know, the place of radio in our culture and the trends and in technology usage. And then I'll go into more detail on that in a minute. But I first present some data that shows what I think is happening with radio and its place and relative to the internet. Then I have a section that talks about the ways the internet has changed people's expectations and standards about what they expect from media. Then I go into an evaluation of what Pacifica has done with the internet, the Pacifica stations, that is, have done with the internet. And that part is based on the spreadsheet that I put together with help from several other people here, that kind of is an inventory of a long list of features that are not available on our on the five station websites. And then I have a specific section about this question of the archives and licensing. And then there's a section that maybe I got a little too passionate. I don't know. I'll see what people think. But that is really pretty critical of our stations for not catching up, not following the trends in terms of expectations of media and what's happening in new media. And then there's a conclusion that I haven't yet written where I will make the case for shifting our priorities to a certain extent and putting more focus on our internet sites. So that's the general outline of the thing. Let's see. I don't know how much detail to go into, but I'll go back to the beginning and present some of the details. In terms of the place of radio, I cite a lot of data, most of it from Arbitron, that argues that radio remained, in spite of the rise of television and now the internet and so on, that radio remains pervasive. They claim that 93% of the U.S. population over the age of 12 listens to radio, and that even among young people and people of color and so on, the groups that you might expect might have lower penetration, so to speak, that there's actually very large and high numbers of people listen to radio. But they define that as people who hear any radio for 15 minutes in a week. So they don't even have to have turned it on deliberately. They may just be in a place where it's on, or they may have it, you know, in their car sometimes, and so on. And I kind of argue that behind the scenes, behind that data, there's some other trends that are a little more distressing, which is that people are spending less time listening to the radio. They value the radio less highly compared to other media, television, and now the internet. And the young people in particular are relying more on the internet and less on radio, giving it less priority in their lives. I don't think this stuff is any great surprise, but it's interesting to see some documentation on it. Meanwhile, there's also data that the number of people listening to audio online is growing pretty steadily. It's still actually relatively small compared to the number of people who listen to radio in some form, to some degree or other. But the line is climbing pretty sharply, and and I also, there's also, you know, we're kind of on the cusp of, with the iPhone and the other smartphones, we're on the cusp of a big change where kind of internet radio, internet audio becomes available, previously been available basically only when you were plugged into a network. It's now going to be, it's now becoming available wherever people go. You can have it in your pocket, you can connect it to your car, so on. The wireless networks are getting faster and more reliable, although none of this stuff is as reliable yet as traditional radio. But I think it's safe to say that in 10 years or 15 or sometime in the not too distant future, you know, virtually every American over the age of 12 or something is going to be carrying a device with them that's capable of listening to audio from the internet wherever they go. And that's going to be a big change. And so obviously we need to adapt to that change. The second section that I call deals with something that I call a new media culture, which is to do with the expectations and standards about what media should deliver. And again, no great surprises here, but I think pulling some things together that I found that a lot of people in Pacifica, to me, don't seem to fully appreciate. People who are, you know, kind of radio-oriented, very radio traditionalists, I think are missing some of these trends. So I wanted to try to lay them out. This what I call this new media culture. I think I just took, you know, I think Pew or somebody used the term, not that it's all that anything special, but one obvious aspect is that, you know, the digital media, the digital technology makes it possible to overcome the distinction between text and photo and video and audio. All these things, now we have multimedia everywhere, and it's possible to integrate them into a single site. And most media organizations all around the world, and certainly in this country, are, you know, wherever they come from, whether you start as a newspaper or a radio station or a magazine or whatever, they are moving fast to use their websites as multimedia hubs, where they bring together whatever they used to produce and combine it with the forms of media they didn't used to produce. So specifically, you know, video everywhere, transcripts for at radio stations and NPR, Democracy Now, many others, but you know, combining these things. The second aspect of the new media culture that I focus on is something that follows from the first point, that people are combining information from different sources, sharing and collaborating, bringing in to their own websites material from elsewhere, whether it's just headlines and links or whole articles or, you know, abstracts with links, pictures, YouTube clips, Twitter feeds, all kinds of stuff, so that they're able to present at a site, you know, under their own heading, their own brand, so to speak. They're actually presenting material from a much wider array of sources, which enables, you know, a given site to have much wider reach and breadth of information than it can possibly produce on its own. The third point, again, all these are obviously no, but the third point is that the internet increasingly is a two-way street. It's interactive. It's not just top-down, you know, we, the media organization, deliver this to you. People now expect, I think, to be able to exchange, to respond, to exchange comments and questions and criticisms and add additional material, and not only to the original provider, but to other users, other listeners or visitors to the site or whatever. And then the fourth point I emphasize is that the other aspect of this, there's a lot of, some of the research shows that people are much less, whereas in the past people would, you know, read one or two newspapers and they'd have, a, you know, two or three TV stations they would look at, and a couple of radio stations they might tune into. Now, people are doing what they call information grazing rather than orienting themselves to a particular set of outlets. They're following their friends. They're jumping from here to there. They're using aggregation sites like Google News or Dig or getting recommendations on Facebook from their friends or things forwarded in email or whatever. And people hop from here to there looking for things that are of interest or that are meaningful to them wherever they come from. But that's another big change in the kind of way, the culture of the media. Okay, so that's the background stuff. And that's pretty much the draft, the very partial draft I sent out a month ago hasn't changed very much. I made a few tweaks, but it's basically the same. The thing I sent out today adds several new sections, and those are more based on the spreadsheet of the assessment of the current websites. We talked about best practices, and I do find some of those. It's also pretty critical, I'm afraid, maybe too much so, but that's where, I don't know, people can, again, see what you think about that. I basically say that, that all of the stations have do a decent job with streaming. I mean, I think that's our it's the most basic thing for radio station websites, and we do at least adequate job. There are some technical glitches from time to time, apparently, interruptions and stuff. I didn't go into that. I did point out that we don't, most of the stations, WBII actually is the best in providing help to users who want to listen specifically on mobile devices. Most of the other stations don't have any information about how to listen on a smartphone or whatever. BAI has a pretty good page about that, so give them a little best practice pat on the back for that. And I talk about how some of the stations make it easier than others to play stuff. I mean, BAI has right on the homepage the Flash player, and with one click you start getting the stream. Now, that's a nice, simple approach. The other stations don't, you make it click through to another page and there's several clicks typically, and then maybe, the default is to play the audio through a separate player application like iTunes or Real Player or something, which again, that's fine. That's what some people want, but, might not be ideal for new listeners. And I like the approach that BAI has of giving you a choice right on the front page where you can either click the Flash player and get it instantly, or you can click a link and then choose which player you want and so on. But basically I say we're doing a pretty good, a decent job with streaming. The second basic set of issues has to do with, presenting programming information to potential listeners. And, Derek, and it's kind of uneven, and I have some detailed comments, which are probably not worth going into now. People can read it about actually quite a lot of differences. I mean, KPFA has links on the homepage to not only the current show, but like the five most recent previous shows and the five upcoming shows. They pack a whole lot of information into the one screen about programming, whereas other stations, KPFK and KPFT, only list typically what's on right now and what's coming up next. PFW, they have something else down at the bottom of the page. You have to scroll down several times, and it appears that it's always only the morning programs are listed on the home page, and if you want to see the rest of the day, you have to click a link and go through to another page. So after, once you're past 9:30 in the morning, that information is not much use. I kind of ding them for that. Anyway, I made a few observations there. I am going to add a section about playlists, because there seems to be a lot of inconsistency in how much the stations do with playlists. I also collected information, but haven't written it up yet, about what the stations are and aren't doing in terms of fundraising, encouraging volunteers, and governance. information about the governance process on the websites. And there again, there are good things and weaknesses. So it's just pointing out some of that. The fifth section is, just to summarize on that stuff above about the streaming and the program information and so on, there's no very dramatic conclusions there, but I think it might be helpful to the station management, the webmasters, and the program councils to kind of, take a look and compare their kind of systematic comparison of what each stations are doing with what the other stations are doing. I hope it'll be useful. Anyway, the fifth section goes into the archives question, and I kind of summarized the background about the sound exchange agreement and so on. And I basically make a pretty strong argument that we have not responded properly to the challenges that are posed by the agreement. I'm definitely not trying to argue. I hope it's clear here. I'm not trying to argue that Pacifica can afford to blow off the law. Obviously, we can't do that. The risks are way too high for that. I'm not at all suggesting that. But what I am suggesting is that we've responded, I guess, on the advice from John Krigler of putting these pretty strict limits on access to the archives. And that is a way of ensuring that we're in compliance, but it's not the only way to ensure that we're in compliance. And I list a whole bunch of other possibilities, one that Jim has talked about implementing a system that would automatically produce archives without music. Well, first of all, just to clarify a point that I think I hope people here understand, which is that nothing in that agreement covers any program that doesn't have music in it. So I don't understand why Krigler or management has put limits on access to archives that don't have music in them. If there are other legal issues, I don't know what they are, and they need to be explained. But insofar as sound exchange is the issue, it doesn't apply whatsoever to non-programs without music.
Stop right there for a second so I can respond to that? Krigler has not put any restrictions on archives that do not have any music in it or fall within the incidental music clauses, that if you have incidental music, you can keep your archives up longer. If it has incidental music, you cannot podcast. If it has no music, you can podcast. That's just my clarification.
Yeah, and I can confirm that's true with John. So.
Hold on a second, please. Thank you. I would like for people to just announce themselves and be recognized rather than interrupt the presentation. It would be better. Thank you.
Sorry, Kathy.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, and I will clarify that in the text here. But maybe I blame Krigler unduly. But my general point I would stand by, which is that it appears that network wide we've put these restrictions that apply across the board without regard. I mean, in varying ways. I mean. It doesn't seem to be any easy way to get out of limiting archives of music shows to 14 days. The only way to get around that is to do what FMU did, which is to get waivers. They apparently had no trouble getting those waivers. So I don't know whether we've tried and haven't succeeded or whether we haven't tried, but I'm more focused on the public affairs and programs, news and public affairs that have either no or minimal music, and I argue that there are a lot of ways we could get around the restriction. We could not have music. We could do what Jim has done at WMNF of cutting the music out of the or recording the archive in such a way the music isn't included. We could encourage programmers to get use music that isn't copyrighted, stuff that's distributed with a Creative Commons license, or to get waivers from musicians. Again, we need all that stuff. We'd need to lawyer to make sure that we're really safe. But surely there is music in the world that isn't covered by the Sound Exchange Agreement. We could also, get programmed to train our and encourage our programmers to edit the archives after the fact to cut out the music. It's a little bit of a burden, but not that much. And I also make the argument that actually we should be breaking up our archives instead of doing an hour or a half hour at a time. They should be broken up by topic into separate files that are easier to label and distribute and so on. And out there, if we're doing that anyway, then cutting out the music is no extra burden. Actually, in this draft, I left out the whole thing about getting waivers from the music publishers, so that's another thing we need to add in. But okay, so that, and again, as I say, I know other people are interested in this whole issue, and if we want to take that out of my report here and deal with the archive problem separately, that would be fine with me. So then in what's now the last part, although not the real conclusion, I kind of, I get pretty critical, I guess, of our stations for not really dealing with the new trends in media. You know, basically I spent hours and hours and hours going through all these sites, page after page after page on these sites, and they're really draggy. There's no indication that we're in a multimedia age except for audio. We have no photos, no video, hardly any transcripts. And obviously, getting some of that stuff would take a certain amount of resources, but not a lot, because there's tons of stuff that's available that is legally possible to embed from other sites, or embed Vimeo, YouTube, and all kinds of other places. And the whole culture of the Internet is, as we've seen, is involved in sharing and linking and so on, and we don't seem to be part of that at all. Indie media is full of, the indie media sites are full of video and photography and stuff contributed by users. They don't pay it doesn't cost them anything. I mean, it costs them for servers and technicians and so on, but they're not paying people for that content. So, I think there's a lot we could do along the same lines. And I also point out that some radio stations are actually doing this. I mean, WMNF. You still there? Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Hello? Yeah, okay. WMNF has, in the news section, Jim, you have photos and transcripts. Out here in the Bay Area, KALW, which is a relatively small public radio station in San Francisco, has launched a new website for local news specifically that's full of photos and some video. New America Media, Youth Radio, all kinds of organizations that, I don't know whether they're as strapped financially as Pacifica, but they're certainly not rolling in dough, and they managed to have much more kind of modern multimedia material on their sites. So similarly in terms of not just the multimedia but other forms of sharing and collaboration, I raised some ideas about things we could do, like with Twitter feeds. On the Messerly demonstrations out here and about the killing of Oscar Grant, there's a lot of interest from people who weren't at the event. I know some sites, many sites actually, had Twitter displayed, embedded on their own sites and Twitter feeds from the scene. Why didn't KPFA do that? Or the Gaza Freedom Flotilla? We didn't try to, do real-time Twitter updating of that. Those are just specific examples, but I think they make a point about where we're using our resources and where we're not. And I also point out about the collaboration. Again, this is being from the Bay Area. My examples are largely from here, but I made myself a little list of. Not by no means complete, I'm sure, but of the many dozens, really, of sites and organizations that are doing local news, that are producing local news daily or weekly here from different parts of the Bay Area, different ethnic communities and neighborhoods, and so on. And curious, and new media experiments and collaboration, and there's something called BayCitizen.org, there's SFPublicPress.org, something called CaliforniaWatch.org, and so on. The UC Berkeley Journalism School sponsoring all kinds of local new, what they call hyper-local sites. So on, all of this is great stuff, and what I mean, not it's not all great stuff, but within it, there's a bunch of great stuff. But none of it gets on our website, so, you know, the best we can do manage with local news is maybe two or three stories a day scattered around an hour news broadcast. And I just think we could do a lot on the web by collaborating with these other organizations. Actually, I'd like to see us bring some of that material onto the air, too, but certainly onto the web. It's easy enough to just, you know, put in a link and a headline and that little abstract of interesting stories from here and there. They don't most of these sites obviously don't have the politics that, the mission that Pacifica has, but I'm not suggesting that we put every story that all of these sites, produce on our site, but certainly there's plenty that would be interesting to many of our listeners. Also, in terms of interactivity, we're pretty lame. I mean, most of the station sites, the Pacifica stations, don't have any. Well, most of them nowadays have an email. If you look hard enough, you can find an email address or maybe a phone number for contacting a programmer. But there's no kind of community interactivity. No. KPFA, as far as I can tell, is the only station that has set up a system for you visitors to the site to comment on specific programs, but it's really pretty barren. With one, actually, the only exception that I found is Guns and Butter has a whole community of people who comment and debate and discuss regularly, but at the other program pages, most typically there are no comments at all, or occasionally one or two. And I think that's largely because the station doesn't promote the comments, doesn't promote on the air the idea that people can respond on the website. Programmers don't seem to respond to the comments that are posted, and so on. So while, you know, there's hundreds of sites all around where there are vigorous discussions and debates that are really engaging a lot of users in debate and discussion, and we're just outside of that and missed that boat. Or so far, anyway. And then the last thing, the last section, which I didn't finish, has to do with our record in terms of integration with social networks. A lot of our sites now have these add this or share this buttons that you click them and it brings up a slew of like 300 icons for different social networks or link sharing sites and that kind of thing. That's a step, but there's a lot more I think we could be doing and should be doing in terms of explaining to our listeners why these buttons are there, what they're all about. And also it goes together with the point I made earlier that we need to divide our archives into more, into smaller segments that are focused on a particular topic, because that way people could distribute them or, promote them to their Facebook friends. You know, here's an interview with so-and-so, or here's an interesting report about this and that issue. If we just tell people to go scroll their way and try to find something, 29 minutes into a 60-minute archive, that's not going to work well. So that's a summary. And then, I do intend to fill in several gaps that I mentioned here, and to write a conclusion that, again, emphasizes the point that the argument is not that we expect our current staff to be able to take on all these new things with and do everything else they're already doing, because that's obviously out of the question. The point is to suggest that the network as a whole and the individual stations need to shift their priorities a little bit, to put more focus on the web, because it is the future. Broadcast radio is not going away in the near term, but over time, I think it's going to be increasingly dwarfed by the digital, internet-based digital media distribution. And if we're going to, if we don't catch up with those trends, we're going to be in bad shape. So that's where it stands now. And I, as I said, I really hope other people will give it a careful read between now and our next meeting. I'm sorry I didn't get it out in time to be of any use tonight, but I do hope people will engage with it and pass on honest reactions, and whether they're minor things or major, you know, when you want to suggest them all wet on this or that, or throw out some section or whatever. So that's it.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much. I just wanted to thank you because that sounds like such an exhaustive body of work, and I know it took a lot of commitment to do that, so thank you for that. We're close to the end of the meeting. It's 10:22, so it leaves us about 8 minutes, 7 minutes. Would anyone like to comment or a question? If you try to keep it quick before we adjourn.
Bill?
Yes, Bill.
Yeah, hi. I was just going to ask Henry, do you want comments now, or you want to do us to review this and send you comments, or wait till you finish the draft, or what would you? How can we help you?
Well, you know, I don't know whether I mean, for you guys, especially you guys who are further east, it's getting late. I don't know whether, but I'm open to comments now, right now on the phone, or by email now, or any time.
I was talking about by email.
The more feedback I get. Well, anytime, yeah, no. No, don't wait for me to finish, because I can try to respond as I finish it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just try to keep it brief, because we're running out of time. And certainly, I would appreciate seeing any comments by email as well. I'm going to offer mine by email. Go ahead. Do you want to say something, Bill?
Yep.
Well, mostly I was just wondering if you by email if you wanted it now or wait till we finish it. But we can, yeah, that's sort of an action item, I guess, for all of us. We can review what he said.
Yeah, review it and respond. Mm-hmm. Certainly deserves it. It was a lot of work. Would anyone else like to?
Dave from KPFT, I like that idea. I need time to actually read through the whole thing. And I think it's a great, great report so far. And I'd love to be a part of this, you know, make something happen.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kathy, can I just say that I would ask that people, rather than addressing the comments to me personally, I think it would make sense to address them to the list, to the whatever that address is, the PAC, PIC, whatever list, so that everybody can see each other's comments and you know, perhaps respond to one another as well as to me. That's kind of in the spirit of what I'm saying, the way new media should work.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Would anyone else like to comment on this report or ask a question?
Kimmery?
Yes, Kimmery.
First and foremost, I just want to commend the committee, because I know throughout the summer I've missed several meetings because I teach summer youth program, and by the time I get home, it's been a long day, and wake up, I missed the meeting. So I'm glad that the summer has come to a close where I can get back involved physically with the committee, and I commend everybody that's given their reports. It's brought me up to date on what I have missed over the last couple of sessions.
All right, thank you. Would anyone else like to comment as we come to close to the end of our meeting today?
Kathy, it's John.
Yes, John.
I think this is a great report, and I think there's some things in there that the committee can look at. Like, I'd like to look at the process of what it would take to actually to obtain waivers for specific material, and see what that would, how much that would actually take. So see if that's actually viable. I think that's something the committee can do. And I really applaud Henry and the committee for looking at this type of work, because I think that this is really the kind of the work of the committee.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to comment or ask a question?
Bill again.
Yes, Bill.
Yeah, and I also like to really thank Henry for compiling all this. It's really good. I'm really looking forward to reading through it in detail. One question, though, I know, you know, Rob Robinson put together PowerPoint presentation on digital distribution a couple of years ago. I don't know if it's available online anywhere, but it kind of it goes along with some of the things Henry's saying. And maybe we'd make that available somehow to the committee and anybody else. It's a little big to email, but I could do that, I guess. I forget how big it is. It probably isn't that bad. I could send it to the whole committee, I guess.
Yeah, either that or maybe we could. It might even be on the website somewhere, right? On KPFTX.
This is John. I don't think it is there.
That came from the programming committee, I believe, right?
I don't think it was ever uploaded.
He presented it at a PNB meeting a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And I'm just looking at it. Actually, it's 237 kilobytes, so it's not that big. And there's another one that goes along with it about some Pew findings.
Okay.
From the Pew Foundation or whatever it is.
If you want to...
Have more information.
If you want to, I'll upload it somewhere and send around links if you don't want to send around an email.
Okay, great. Well, that'd make it more available for other people, too, if they want to look at it later. Okay.
Okay. That sounds good. All right. Are there any last thoughts before we adjourn?
Kathy, Henry again. Can I just take half a minute? Thank you. Just want to take half a minute to respond to John. Not a complete answer, but it's interesting. The exchange with the general manager of WFMU that I sent out tonight, when he explained to me how they got waivers from almost 1,000 record labels, I sent him back. I said, "Sounds like a huge and time-consuming and expensive undertaking." And his response was, "Not at all. It was really easy and cheap." I'm reading this verbatim from his email. "We got a pro bono lawyer to write the waiver for us, and we did several blanket mailings over the course of a few years to all the record labels we work with." And he told me on the phone that virtually every company they sent it to signed it and mailed it right back to them. No lawyering or anything. So I'm not sure how they, whether they ever, I don't know if we could repeat that, but it's an interesting. And I sent the email includes a copy of the waiver document they got their lawyer to draft. So when he says we're free to use it.
And that's one of our action items for the next meeting, hopefully, to get someone on the call to talk to us about that. Also, we have at WBAI, one of the producers is actually a legal representative for artists. So I might also inquire of him what the story is with things like that. He might be able to help us. So without further ado, I would love to entertain a motion to adjourn. Anyone?
So move.
Thank you.
Do you want to review action items?
Kathy, we love you so much, we don't want to adjourn.
Well, thank you. That's so sweet. All right, so let's adjourn, and I believe our next meeting is, what is it? I think it might be September 25th. Let me see. It was in one of the notes. Well, I'll send out a confirmation of the next meeting tomorrow, so to make sure that we all know and we can put it on our...
It's on the KPFTX website. Is the 22nd.
The 22nd. Thank you. Okay. So hopefully we'll be able to reach quorum early and we can have a little bit more to report. And I would say let's try to communicate through the email on moving forward on some of these other action items that we will be involved in moving forward. So thank you all.
Okay. And
for being with us today. Yes.
As Kimberly, please don't forget to send me the information that I need to read over.
Okay.
Because I was trying to look at the agenda, and my Yahoo had closed out, so when I best had the YX bill to go back and, go over that again, because I was trying to get back open to the site.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll resend everything.
That's for me, I guess.
All right. All right, you guys have a blessed week.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah. Bye-bye now.
Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Good night.